The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Glory to you, O Lord. Jesus moved about within Galilee. He did not wish to travel in Judea because the Jews were trying to kill him, but the Jewish Feast of Tabernacles was near. But when his brothers had gone up to the feast, he himself also went up, not openly, but as it were in secret. Some of the inhabitants of Jerusalem said, "Is he not the one they are trying to kill? And look, he is speaking openly, and they say nothing about him, and they say nothing to him. Could the authorities have realized that he is the Christ? But we know where he is from. When the Christ comes, no one will know where he is from." So Jesus cried out in the temple area as he was teaching and said, "You know me and also know where I am from. Yet I did not come on my own, but the one who sent me, whom you do not know, is true. I know him because I am from him and he sent me." So they tried to arrest him, but no one laid a hand upon him because his hour had not yet come. The Gospel of the Lord. Okay. Again, you know, very typical Johannine passage. Yeah, and these passages from the Gospel of John, I think, quite easy to get us spun around, right? And if it's not us, it's me, okay? So I'm getting spun around by the Gospel of John, okay? My first confession of the day, getting spun around. There is a lot going on here, and we're not exactly helped to see that by the fact that we have, you know, reading from the Gospel of John, chapter 7, verses 1 and 2, and then 10, and then 25 to 30. It's like there's a lot happening also in the, you know, between the lines, as it were, there. One of those things, which I think is terribly significant, is that Jesus' adversaries are bringing up again the fact that he cured on the Sabbath, and you're like, man, this is getting really tired. You know, at this point, it's like, okay, so I cured the cripple on the Sabbath. Okay, great. You know, thank you. Great. Okay, can we put that behind us now? It's like, no, we're not going to put that behind us. That's going to keep going all the way to your death. Okay, we're going to keep that charge alive all the way to death. And I think that itself is significant, right? Is like, there is no forgiveness in them. There's not. Of course, there can't be forgiveness because it's a different agenda. They're not living by the agenda of forgiveness. They're living by their own agenda, and this is about power for them, and Jesus is running afoul of their power. So he must be killed, right? And they've already determined it from the point that he cures on a Sabbath. Of course, he cures at a word. That's not breaking the Sabbath. But then he tells the man to pick up his mat and go. And that means that he's commanding someone to break the Sabbath. That's enough for them. Not because, you know, because it's the most significant violation. Of course, it's a significant violation. You know, but one that chases him around until he dies, it's getting a bit ridiculous. At least from my read, it's getting a bit ridiculous. And then Jesus says, okay, fine. So that's, I did that on a Sabbath. What happens when a baby is born, and then 8 days after, he has to be circumcised? What happens when that day falls on a Sabbath? And I say, well, you do it. So you break the Sabbath, right? So, but you say you justify it, you know, by saying this is the command. And that you've got competing commands there. And so he says, well, if one part of a person, say, need be redeemed, or however you want to look at the language of that, then why can one whole human being not be redeemed, right? So why can I not cure the cripple on the Sabbath when you're circumcising on the Sabbath? Okay, so they're caught, and I think the main point of reflection there is to see that they're caught up in their own game. And that's very significant for us to see, because we get caught up in our own games. We're playing some other game. Not the one that Jesus is playing. We're not members of the team that he's invited us to be part of. It's not that game. We're playing some other game. And then making his stuff fit to our agenda. Which of course, doesn't work. Yeah, it doesn't. You see, it's a problem when it does work, isn't it? I mean, that's the bigger problem. it doesn't work. It doesn't work as it relates to our sanctification, our becoming, say, members of the royal priesthood, our being able to give glory to God, our being able to bring flourishing to the corner of creation that he's entrusting to our care, right? Exercising God's, good and wise stewardship, right? All of that is kind of off to the side. We're just going to play our own game. So let's take the little pieces that we want and let's hold against him the pieces that we don't want. So we keep him in that space and we keep, you know, our own safe games, even though they're most deadly games we can play, you know, we're keeping them intact. This pushes us into, some of the rest of the passage, right, where we see there's questions about whether or not Jesus is the Messiah. I think that's, you know, it's terribly interesting to see that. Of course, they've got their own little reasons for not exactly believing that he is the Messiah, right? We know where he's from. And we're not going to know where the Messiah is from. That is a strand in first century Judaism, but it's not held by all. But here it is. You know, well, we're not sure. Okay, because you know what is Jesus calling for? It's not simply an assent to any number of propositional truths. It's an assent of the whole person to the person of Jesus. It's love for love, right? So it's the whole thing, right? We're getting the whole Jesus. And in return, we're made to respond with the entirety of our life. So, of course, wherever we find a little bit of, yeah, you know, like, I have a bit of a question about that. And that question spares me from giving myself whole and entire, then maybe I'll lean on that. Let me call it an excuse, okay? So we have this issue for ourselves as well. Sometimes we get trapped in any number of questions. Yeah, we get caught up in any number of questions. Some of those questions are things like, why? Right? Why? I always, when I'm doing spiritual direction, I'm always listening for why. And usually it's like, why me? Do you know? Okay, but we don't have to go there this morning. I'm just saying, in your own head, where you're in this why space, think of why very often as a barrier that prevents you from following Jesus. This is the way whys often work. So we're getting that kind of, oh, we're a bit, we're not sure on the point. Okay, are we not sure on the point, or are we not sure on the bigger point, which is that Jesus is calling for love as a result of the gift of love that he's giving? Okay, then, but what Jesus doesn't say, he doesn't give the kind of response that you'd expect facing this question, but he does say something terribly interesting. Right? He says, I did not come on my own, but the one who sent me, whom you do not know, is true. I know him because I am from him, and he sent me. Okay, so what do we have here? This is very interesting for our paradigms as it relates, like our ways of seeing Jesus and how he fits in our own systems of thought. We look at this and say, okay, well, the people of his day thought they knew God, and they looked on Jesus and said, well, he's not from God, okay, because they thought they knew God. And Jesus is saying to them, you do not know God, which is why you don't know me. And so the Christian revelation, right, Jesus as the revelation of God is giving us something entirely different here. I mean, it's really to flip it on its head, okay? So he's going to say, yo, if you want to know the true and living God, you have to look at me, not me, Jesus, okay? So you have to, if you want to know who God is, you have to look at Jesus. Okay, it doesn't work the other way. I mean, I could say sometimes it does work the other way. That's kind of haphazardly it works the other way. Sometimes we stumble into a truth of God, we can apply that to Jesus and say, oh yeah, okay, this is great. But very often it doesn't. Yeah, so how many of us, when we think, I'm going to think about God today, I'm going to start there. I'm going to start with the crucifix, right? I'm going to start with the full revelation of the glory of God, Jesus crucified. Because that's where we should start. This is the revelation of God. You know, how many of us think of, when we think of God, we think of Jesus washing his disciples' feet? Okay, this is extraordinary, right? Because if we're content to say start with our own image of God, and I think that we get a lot of it from philosophy, by the way, but even though many of us are not philosophers, I don't consider myself to be a philosopher either, right? It's like, But we get these things as, the result of philosophical reflection. We say, this is God. And then we have a hard time bridging the gap between God and Jesus. And it's like, and the reality is this big betrayal. There's a big betrayal of God who's revealed himself in and as Jesus of Nazareth. I have to go to Jesus. This is how God is choosing to reveal himself. And from there we discover who God is. Right? So, I mean, is our prayer, is our life, you know, is it, say, inspired by the God who is nothing other than love? Right? Is it inspired by the God who gives himself to the end to free us and to make us kings and priests of his loving rule, so, right, so that we can be offering God sacrifice, we can be praising him, we can pray to him with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength, we can love him with real dedication and sincerity, we're able to pour ourselves out in his service. I mean, is it that God? Or is it the God who's the angry school teacher, right? Who's just, it's just grades and discipline, right? It's just all the time, right? And then it's like, okay, well, I just want to behave, right? I want to behave. I mean, it's a very different view of life. I think it's a very different experience of God also in prayer, right? Where one is enlivening and one is pretty deadening. But which image do we have of God? We have to allow, again, the image of God that he proposes to us, right? Namely, Jesus of Nazareth, to be our default image of God as well. So we're in this space with him. Again, we're journeying to the cross. We're looking intently at who Jesus is, what he is doing, because it's ours simply to trust and follow him on the way. It's ours to be re-enlivened by him so that we can be about God's work in the world.